This recording is a production of Anabaptist Financial. More recordings are available on our website at www.afweb.org under the Resources menu or by calling 800-653-9817. This presentation was recorded at a business seminar held on February 17, 2026 in Arthur, Illinois.
Good afternoon and welcome. It's encouraging for people that have gone to a lot of effort to make an event like this happen when they see a good participation here. So thank you for being here. When I think of all the truths and examples and stories that were given, my thoughts went of how can we ever remember it all? And the truth is we can't. There was an older lady, not a professing Christian, very frugal and savvy in business, had a bulk food store, and most of her things that she sold was measured out with weight and a measuring peck. One day her friends came, bought a few items, and while they were there gave her an invitation to come to revival meetings that evening. So out of curiosity she went, was there at the revival meetings that night, and about 2 weeks later she met the pastor. She was in town and coming down the street, and she met the pastor, and she went up to him and she said, "Thank you so much for what you shared in your message. I was there a few weeks ago in the revival meetings." So the pastor was curious and he asked, "What was my message about?" And she said, "I don't remember." And she said, "All I know is I went home and the next morning I took the false bottom out of my measuring peck." So you may not remember nearly everything that's said, but hopefully you can go home and put a few things into practice. Working on your business and not in your business is an interesting one for me. I started out young in business. I was 21 years old and was sole proprietor, and then later bought shares into a company and became partnerships with an older gentleman and learned a lot of good valuable lessons, a few of which we'll be sharing today. And God said, "Let us make man in our image after our likeness." You can read that in Genesis 1, verses 26 through 28. We are brilliant, intelligent, and totally capable of understanding. And why is that? It's because we are created beautifully in His image. That goes fairly directly against our teaching, our upbringing. We are taught from a young age of humility. We're taught the sin of pride, and that I do understand. But let's not degrade ourselves below of what God has created us to be. We bring value. We bring a lot of good. God has created us for a purpose. Every one of you that's here today has been created for a purpose, and you can bring value. Knowing that we are made in God's image and thus share many of His characteristics provides a solid basis for self-worth. Human worth was not defined by possessions, achievements, physical attractiveness, or public acclaim. Instead, it comes from being made in His image. It's beautiful, friends, that we have a Heavenly Father that knows us, that understands us. He created us, and He brought us into this world that we might bring honor to Him. Anything that I say today as far as for personal wealth is not that we might gain some personal recognition, but to realize that we've been created for a purpose and bring value to those that we work with. It's very important, and it largely depends on our dad and mother. Some have brought up and were told over and over when they were young that they were not of much worth, were no good, and if they don't straighten up, they won't amount to anything. And if you grew up under that, it's difficult to value yourself. A lot of our parents came from a time that to give praise to their children, you didn't hear it much. And I see that often when I talk to one individual and get to know them good enough personally, that they struggle with self-worth. We're made in God's image and we're brought into this world that we might bring praise to Him. There's a quote, "We would worry less of what others think of us if we realized how seldom they do." Often we're so concerned what people think about it, and if we really know the honest truth, they probably don't think that much about you. And if you make a mistake, they soon forget it, but we hammer ourselves. Knowing that we're a person of infinite worth gives you the freedom to love God and know Him personally and make a valuable contribution to those around you. Life is made to be enjoyable. It's really important that we're a happy people. That's what God designed us to be, that we're happy at home. It helps out good in our marriages, in our children's relationships, in our business. We have a quote in our company that we use at times, and that is that there are a lot of people that can get a lot done, and there are a lot of people that can have a lot of fun, but there are very few people that can get a lot done while they're having a lot of fun. So business is meant to be enjoyable. Your work relationship with your fellow employees, with your boss, your partners, life is made to be enjoyable and shouldn't walk around stressed and overwhelmed. Here's an important quote I'd like for you to remember, if you can take this home with you, and that is Arthur Scott Peck said, "Until you value yourself, you won't value your time. Until you value your time, you will do nothing with it." I'd like for you to stop and contemplate and get a right and proper perspective of where your time would bring the most value to your team. And then with zeal and vibrancy, humbly fulfill your duties. It's good for you to stop. Who are you? What are your abilities? What are your gifts? If you can get that, a proper perspective in your mind, and then with zeal and with vibrancy, seek to fulfill those duties. To be able to work on your business and not in your business, we must understand leadership. Leadership isn't about control. It's about influence. If you want to influence your people in your company, you must be present and engaged in your position. It's so important, especially when you're young in business, that you establish a culture. People soon get to know you in the community. Your local banker, your county judge, or the magistrates, or your county road department, they're soon going to learn to know who you are. They're soon going to know how you respond. They're soon going to know if they can depend on you. And they're going to start seeing you as a culture or your company for who you are and for what you stand for. Had a lot of good truth shared today already, a lot of it I could reiterate and support and encourage for. A lot of good things were shared that if we actually take it home and implement it in our business practice, will take you way up the road in building the kingdom. Peter Drucker had such a great ability to simplify concepts. One of the things he tells us that efficiency is doing the thing right. But effectiveness is doing the right thing. There are two ways to say that. I'll say it again. One of the things he tells us that efficiency is doing the thing right. That's efficiency, if you do it right. But effectiveness is doing the right thing. So you've heard a lot today. You've heard a lot of good things. And it is efficient that we do the thing right, but what is really effective is if we do the right thing. Leaders can delegate efficiency, but they must deal personally with effectiveness. The first one is understanding that effectiveness comes about through enabling others to reach their potential. That's one of the most important things to delegation, is to help other people, help them to reach their potential. Second is to ignore the dignity of work and the elegance of simplicity and the essential responsibility of serving each other is to be on the dying edge. I'll say that again. If you want to be on the dying edge, then you ignore the dignity of work, the elegance of simplicity, and the essential responsibility of serving each other. We heard a good bit about legacy. If you want to create a legacy, you need to live it first. You must become what you desire to see in others. I'd like to recommend a book, is Leadership is an Art. If you could order that and get it off the shelf and read it, it would do yourself well and your company. It's a Bible-based, he's a Christian man, and he has really, really good comments in there. but be careful who you give it. Because a woman bought the book and she read it and she thought, boy, my boss could benefit with this. She gave him the book and she was fired. So you need to be a little careful. Maybe you need to read the book and apply some of it to yourselves. Succession is one of the key responsibilities of leadership, yet the law of legacy is something few leaders seem to practice. Too often leaders put their energy into organizations, buildings, and systems or other lifeless objects. Only people live on after we're gone. Everything else is temporary. To teach leaders to take responsibility in your company is risky. If you're a selfish person, if you're out for the good of others and you're wanting to promote others and to help others, then it's fairly safe. But I had a young man work for me years ago, and I've been in business for 30 years and in different states, so don't try and pinpoint me to a certain individual or try and figure out my story, for those of you that know me. But I had a young man that worked for me, and he was very good, and I soon seen that he would make an excellent manager for me at the mill. So I brought him into the office and I said, what's your plan? And he said, I'm here. I'm here to stay. I'm here at least until my children start coming out of school. So I said, all right, I'm going to teach you to be a manager and to a leader in my mill. And I told him my business philosophy. I told him my business secrets. We discussed profit and loss sheets. And he was doing fine. He was doing excellent. But guess what? An opportunity came along. And he quit before his first child started school. So it can be risky. It can be. He didn't realize it when he committed himself to stay with me until his children started coming out of school of what for opportunities might come along. But there was an opportunity for him to become involved in a business, and he left before his first child started school. So it's risky. But was I glad for him? Am I grateful that he could better himself and become part of a business that he wanted to? That's a decision you're going to have to make. But if we're out for the good of others and we desire God's blessing upon everyone that we associate with, then you're going to have to be open to some of those because it's going to happen. If you want to work on your business and not in your business, you will need people. That's a pretty simple statement. If you own a company and have no employees and you're the only one working there, you know what happens when you walk out and close the door. It stops. If you have somebody, if you've got a gang saw and you're feeding lumber into it and there's somebody stacking it, if one or two of you leave, there's no lumber going to be fed in, there's no lumber coming out. It's very simple. You're going to have people. So if you need people, you're going to have to attract them. You're going to have to be able to attract people in your company. And just as important as having people work for you, almost, I'd like to say more important, but you have to get started. You need people. But just as important is what type of people do you attract to your team? And it's a lot on what you stand for. It's your culture. It's the principles, biblical principles that you operate under of what type of people that you're going to attract. And once you start attracting those type of people, you'll find them bringing their friends. We have a comment that we soar with the eagles. We don't flutter around with the turkey buzzards. Okay, we get up to a higher level. I don't like when there's half shady stuff. We're cut and dry. We're clear. We understand what we want, and we understand how to get there. And we don't like to have people on our team that don't support our values. There's an established law, number three, that the better leader you are, the better leaders you attract. Here's a quote. If you develop yourself, you experience personal success. If you develop a team, your organization can experience growth. If you develop leaders, your organization can achieve explosive growth. If you have a young man that's willing to learn, or a middle-aged man, and he's intelligent and he's company-driven, and you teach him how to be a leader, and you give him some room to grow, it's amazing where they can take your company. And I have a few things that I would like to give to you by example of a story. They say there's nothing that carries freight like a story. So I have a few that I am going to be able to give you of where I made mistakes when I was younger and didn't understand the beauty of delegation. You absolutely cannot ignore the law of process. To become a good leader and establish a solid company that has structure and operates on God's principles is so important, friends. You cannot separate your Christian life and your relationship with the Lord Jesus and your work. Some people try to go to church on Sunday, and then Monday morning they turn into a different person, but it doesn't work that way, friends. We build the kingdom. I like that statement. I hadn't heard of it. Is we build more kingdom in 6 days at work than we do Sunday at worship. I believe that to be truth. Not making light at all of our Sunday morning worship. It takes time and hard work to attract good people and retain them. Most of all, we need the blessings of God upon our endeavors. It does, friends. It takes hard work. And it takes time to attract good people and to keep them. And you can be as ever good a person that you want to be. You can pay them as well as you want to be. But prepare yourself. You're not going to be able to retain everyone that you hire. There's opportunities come along and we bless them and we wish them the best. To become a good leader, you have to be able to sort through the clutter. Okay? Sometimes we go through business and we're just not sure. Some things don't look the clearest. I'm going to give you an example of sorting through clutter. The President of the United States, the world's smartest man, an old priest, and a young mountain climber were in a jet. And they were flying around about 20,000 feet in elevation. And the pilot comes out of the cockpit and comes back and says, "Friends, we're having serious engine trouble. We're going to crash." He takes a parachute and he jumps out the door and he says, "Grab yourself a parachute. There they are. Save yourself. I'm an important man. I'm going to take one and leave." When he left, the rest looked around, and there was only three parachutes. The president said, "I'm a very important man. I'm going to take a parachute," and he jumped. The smartest man said, "I'm very valuable to the United States. I'm the smartest man, and I help the president," and he takes a parachute and jumps. Now's the old priest and the young mountain climber. The old priest looks at the young mountain climber and he says, "Son, help yourself." He said, "I've lived for the Lord all these years and I'm prepared to meet my maker." He said, "Go ahead and take the parachute and jump." The young mountain climber said, "No problem, sir." He said, "There's still two parachutes here. The world's smartest man just jumped out with my backpack." He didn't sort through the clutter. Okay, he grabbed whatever was the closest and put him on his back and he jumped and it didn't open for him. What did it do? It cost him his life. Not a true story, but it's an example of cutting through the clutter. You're going to find it as business owners, you're going to find times that you're in a distress. And unless you're grounded and settled and know where you stand prior, you're going to spill some Cheerios that weren't supposed to be coming out. I had a man that struggled with anger, and I was told that he was having a tough time, and I asked him to come into my office, and when he came in, he was still very warm, and he was sitting in my desk, and that's one thing I don't have. My father had a terrible temper, and I decided in my business, we will not have anger. It's devastating, friends, and don't allow it in yourself or your company. Anger is terrible, devastating. So I had this man sit in front of my office. We were sitting there talking and he couldn't get himself calmed down, and I had a bottle of water sitting on my desk, and while I was talking I reached over and I knocked it over and it spilled over towards him, and the water started coming towards him. He backed up and he started pushing the water back on the desk. He said, "What do you do that for?" And I said, "What came out when I spilt that bottle?" He said, "Water." And I said, "What's coming out of you?" Boy, he sat back. He thought over a while, and I said, "I'd like for you to go home, and then tomorrow morning we'll meet again." And we had a little better talk. But when a man's angry, he can't think straight. He can't make proper choices and decisions. And please, when you're going through a difficult time in your business or you're working through some relationships, anger is not a part that you want in your company. Add value. The most important part in hiring good people and keeping them is showing that you care. When they can feel that we love them, when they feel we're glad to see them every day, I love to walk through the yard, to walk through the shop, and a loader operator will go by and he'll give me a smile and he'll wave. There's a mutual feeling of respect and appreciation for each other. We're friends. I have some people that we've worked together for 15 years, and I cherish the friendship very much. When a person feels that you love them and you care for them, if they feel comfortable, come into your office and sit down and talk to you about their ailing mother. Or there's one comes in and asks if he could have a few minutes, and he comes in and he sits on his desk. And yes, it's on company time. And he sits there and he talks about having a difficult time of relating to a teenager. Those are precious times, friends. And take them, take the opportunity and establish a relationship with your people. It's not all about the cash. Henry Ford, after working through a difficulty with one of his men, made this comment. He said, "Why is it when I ask a man for his two hands, I get his whole body?" With time, over the years, you're going to find that your people bring themselves, they bring their ailments, they bring their some luggage. But that's part of the kingdom. We're here to help build each other up. You can't give what you do not possess. I don't need to spend much time on that. That's been shared well today. You cannot give what you do not have. We had an old business friend. He was very well to do, but he would make the comment, "You cannot sell from an empty wagon." And if you think about that, if you want to be able to help someone, if you want to be able to share, build each other up, you're going to have something to give. You cannot give what you do not have, or you cannot sell from an empty wagon. Our talents we have, the air we breathe, the strength we have, the ability to think and reason are all daily gifts directly from God in heaven. And thank Him daily for it. Ask God for wisdom and thank Him daily for the abilities that we have. The more intentional you have been in growing personally, the more you have to offer. The more you continue to pursue personal growth, the more you will continue to have to offer. And don't quit. It's part of sanctification. The more that we come closer to the Lord and the more that we try to help people, the better we become. And that's what God's design is in His people, is that we might bring glory to His name. Jack Canfield quotes, "You can have control over three things in your life." We don't have many rights in this life. And we don't have much things that we can control, but three things you do have control over. The one is the thought you think, the image you visualize, and the action you take. Number one, the thought you think, the images you visualize, and the action you take. If we're out working, we're driving a forklift or we're running a nailer, we're in the office or we're doing quotes, often we've done it long enough that it sort of comes repetitious for us. You can actually almost think something else while you're doing it. But which direction is your thoughts going? Is it negatively or is it positive? This one's special to me here. That's a picture of the shop that we owned in Somersville. We were there for about 20 years. We sold it in January of 24. But if you look at that, you have our nail room, you have our gang saw room, you have our board line, you have our sawmill. And our HR man made this for me. And he put up there some quotes. So a young man might be struggling. Young teenager, and he's not sure what he wants to do in life. And an older gentleman senses it, and he comes up and he nudges him in the right direction. Maybe someone's mother passed away. Maybe another young person is struggling with a relationship with his daddy. And you might just be able to be a tremendous booster for him if you just spend a little bit of time, and especially so as owners. Please, owners, employers, be sensitive and subject to your men's struggles. 20 years ago, I was an aggressive young man, loved production and efficiency, loved my job, and I loved my people, and I gave it all I had, but I was a little too aggressive. And I was working out in the shop, I was helping doing maintenance, and on our brewer cutoff saw, there was an infeed deck, and a chain had come off. And I come flying in there with a pliers and vice grip and whatever it takes to get it running, And I had a daddy and two sons that worked for me at the time. And I almost had it together, almost was ready to run. And one of the young boys leaned over to me and he said, "Be kind to my younger brother today." 2 weeks ago, he asked a young girl for her friendship. And yesterday, he got his letter and it was negative. And he's really struggling. He's having a tough time. So here I am, aggressive to get this cutoff run. And the nailers are waiting on lumber. Okay, we've got to get this gang saw running. And I say, "Charlie, hey, step it up a notch." And he's bleeding in his heart because his dreams just got shattered. So be careful. Be really careful as an employer. Realize that you may be working with a young man that's struggling. Are you building the kingdom, or are you concerned about building an extra load of pallets? Be intentional in what you think. 2009 or 2010 was a tough time for me. Business was tight, margins were thin, and I called a second cousin of mine, and I was talking to him on the phone, and I was crying the blues, and he said, "Whoa." He said, "Wait a minute." He said, "God gave you a quart jar this morning full of energy, and you're using it up one drop at a time." He said, "Are you going to take all this energy one drop at a time and do all this doo-doo? Or are you going to think positive? Or are you going to take that energy and do what you can to make yourself better?" And it was a real eye-opener for me, and I think of that a lot. In the afternoon, 2 o'clock in the afternoon, you look at your quart jar and you're down to maybe a third of it left. How have you used that energy? Have you used it to glorify the Lord, to build the kingdom, to make positive comments and notes, or are you negative? When you drive a car, you're going down the road, I don't think and worry all the time that the transmission might go out. You go around the curve and you say, "Boy, I hope them tie rod ends hold on." And it starts getting dark and he said, "My, I sure hope my alternator keeps my battery up." No, you don't think about it all the time. You drive your car and enjoy the ride. So when you go through life, don't try to continuously think about the negatives of what could go wrong. Do not forget the law of process. How do you eat an elephant? One bite at a time. You're most certainly not going to take one big gulp and swallow them because it's not going to work. And it's the same way with starting a business. If you're going to start a business and you're going to recruit a crew and you're going to establish culture, it doesn't happen in a week's time. Be patient with yourself and be patient with your people. So let's make a start. The old proverb is true. If you chase two rabbits, both will escape. You focus on what you want to do. Focus on getting started. Start your business. Structure it right. Ask for advice and give it some time. If you wouldn't follow yourself, why would you follow anyone else? Most of us lead busy but undisciplined lives. We have every expanding to-do list, trying to build momentum by doing and doing and doing, and it rarely works. That's where I found myself. I had all kinds of to-do lists. Jim Collins, in his book From Good to Great, made a comment. "Those who build good to great companies made as much use of stop doing lists as the to-do lists. They displayed a remarkable amount of discipline to unplug all sorts of extraneous junk. You must be ruthless in your judgment of what you should not do. Make a list for yourself as an owner or as a general manager for your boss. Things you should do and things you should not do." That's important, friends. We have all these lists and things of that we think we should do, but start making lists as an owner of what you should not do. Number one is you don't need to be out changing tires on a forklift. You don't need to be sharpening blades. You don't need to be doing a lot of things that someone else can do better. A successful businessman told me one time, he says, "I don't do anything that I can pay someone to do." All right? Now, I like the illustration that was given in the partnership. Was that's the way they do. But if you want to do different, it's fine. We have a lot of different examples and a lot of approaches. If you find yourself in a position where you're at, you have 3 or 4 employees and you want to sharpen the blades, you want to strap the load down on your load of pallets of an evening, if you're happy and it's working, fine, leave it. But what you find happening is in growth of business, as your business grows, you're going to find that you simply cannot do everything yourself anymore. And if you try to do it, you're going to stress yourself out. rise above your own dust that you created with your own business. What I found when I was going through business is I made a fair amount of noise and I made a fair amount of dust. And if I wasn't careful and pulled back every once in a while, I couldn't see clearly. So it does yourself well to remove yourself from the dust. This was the hardest lesson that I ever learned in my life. I was young in business. I was out in my shop and I was pushing for all I was worth. And I got a message from one of the employees that my partner's in the office and would like for me to come in. So I went running in, I burst in the door and I red in my face and I stood there and there he stood. Strong, calm and composed, and he said, "Paul, we need to talk a little." And I said, "Sure, what you got?" I was wanting to get back out in the shop. And he said, "I'd like for you to go on a 1 week's vacation." I said, "Whatever for?" I said, "I can't leave. If I leave, this place will stop." He said, I'd really like if you'd leave for a week. "When would you like for me to go?" And he said, "Tomorrow." I said, "I can't leave. If I leave, this place will stop." I said, "Why? Why do I need to go on vacation?" And then he hit me with a load of brick. He said, "Paul, you're like a dog backed into a corner. And every time somebody comes up to you, you snap and snarl at them." Well, I just dropped my head and I stood there for a little bit and I said, "Okay." I went home and told Geneva that she can pack her bags. We're leaving for a week. And she thought it was quite interesting. I didn't have time to till the garden. I didn't have time to weed the flower bed. I didn't have time to mow the lawn. And all of a sudden, we're leaving for a week. But I came back, friends. When I came back, I drove in the lane. He said, "I'm not supposed to come back for 7 days. I was scared spitless. I figured we'd lose it all. I come back, I drove in the lane. The building was still standing. There was 3 loads of pallets sitting out there and they were strapped down. The tickets were hanging on their places where the truck drivers come in to get them. I walked through the shop and it was clean. There was still lumber in the yard. But it was a very good lesson for me that others can do things also. And if you find yourself in that place, if you find yourself that you don't think anybody else can, probably be good if you'd take a trip. Delegate. Pull away and think. The greatest enemy of good thinking is busyness, and it is important, my friends, to take time to think. More than once, we can read in the Bible where a really good example of Jesus went out alone, or Jesus and his disciples would pull away from the crowd and go into a solitary place. Here's a word of caution to the employers. And if you delegate someone to be an authority. Abraham Lincoln said, "Nearly all men can stand adversity, but if you want to test a man's character, give him power." So be careful. As you delegate, as you put men in authority, be careful that there is a humbleness and a meekness there. That's something that is so important and so valuable in our company is transparency, honesty, being authentic, and humble. Meekness is not weakness. And because a man is fired up and enjoys his job and does his best, doesn't mean that he's a proud person. But you don't have to be arrogant and proud to do a good job. The beauty of humbleness and meekness is wonderful in the life of an owner and his family. Take small steps in your business. And you have to put each one of these in place for you in your application. But for us, it was, we have a van that comes around every week. One day a week, a van comes around and picks up our dull gang saw blades and takes them, and he brings sharp ones the next week and picks up the dull ones. Well, we discovered that we can make someone else responsible. I don't have to do that, rush around yet after work and get those ready. Somebody else can, and they can do an excellent job. Delegate. Now you have a team of people recruited. You have a profitable business, a company base, and equipment in place, and you're experiencing growth in your company, and it's time to delegate. If you're going to hire a leader for your company, then you're going to have to get out of the way. That's tough, really tough. I hired a general manager, and after about 6 months, I didn't like him. And I had a good friend, a consultant that I worked with a lot. He was a retired loan officer. He came and worked for me for a few days, and one day we were driving down the road, and I looked over at him, and I said, "Jerry, I'm going to let him go." And he said, "Paul, you can't. you can't let the smartest man of Greene County go. And I said, I don't like him. I don't. He said, no, Paul, please don't. Just give it some time. And I gave it some time, and I looked at what the real issue was, and the real issue was is he was in my way, and the reason he was in my way is because I didn't get out of the way. If you hire yourself a manager, if you're going to hire a general manager, if you're going to hire a leader, then you're going to have to get out of the way, or you're going to set him up to fail. There are a lot of good people out there that can lead a company, but they can't if you don't let them. Often when we find ourselves too busy in our business, it's one of four things. And I've got the fifth one here. I want you to pay attention to the fifth one. It's not written down here. Number one, we don't understand the beauty of delegation. Number two, we're either too proud or ignorant to realize that we cannot do it alone. Number three, we're too selfish to compensate people generously who could and would take some of the daily duties from us if we would let them and have it and teach them how we want it done. Number four, we simply don't know how to go about getting started and are not willing to ask for help. Those are four of the main reasons. And the third was mine. I wasn't generous enough to pay what it took to get a good general manager. But after I hired one and I got out of the way, my business was much more profitable even after paying the general manager. They can think better. And you as the owner can think more clear and you make better decisions and choices. Number five, and this is a true statement, and it may be for you. If you're a smaller company, you have four or five men, and you're totally in control, you're a sole proprietor, and you enjoy it that way, leave it. There's nothing wrong with that. You don't have to delegate out. If you like to get the blades ready for the guy coming next week, if you want to strap your load of pallets down, if you want to stay in your own doors, have at it. But don't make it to where you become so stressed out that you don't enjoy life and your wife doesn't know you as her husband anymore. God gave you two hands and not eight like the octopus. Success for leaders can be defined as the maximum utilization of the abilities of those working with them. That's one thing you want to remember. Success for leadership is if you can define and maximize, utilize the abilities of those working with him. Clear communication is of utmost importance. Up on the doorway in the office of our HR guy is a small little paper, and it says, when expectations are clear, then accountability is fair. That's something you want to use. When expectations are clear, then accountability is fair. If you tell a person how you want it done, if you tell them where you want him to stack this row of logs, if you tell them where to put this load of pallets of what truck to load on what trailer, if they know exactly what is expecting of them, then hold them accountable. If they don't do it right, then there's consequences. Printed job descriptions, we heard about that today. It's fairly common that when we travel the same road in the same directions as others have traveled, we end up at the same destination they did. Isn't that something? That's about as simple and as straightforward as it can come, but it's a lot of truth. Some people think that they can do the same as other people did, but end up in a different destination, and it doesn't work. Train your men of what you want them to accomplish. Not necessarily how to do it, but what you want done. They may have a better idea than you do to get the job done. I had the biggest surprise. I had told my maintenance men what I would like to have done. We have a cutoff saw to where they cut off the lumber, and there's chunks of firewood that can vary from an inch to 16 inches. And I wanted the small debris out of there, and the sawdust and the end trims, so I told them what I want designed. It looks a little bit like a concrete truck with a cone that would turn, and it would have slots in it that the sawdust and the little bit of the firewood drops out. And I said, you have that right under the belt, and then the bigger pieces will come out on a belt and go up to the dump truck, and the little pieces will fall down, and it'll go to the chipper. I come back 2 weeks, 3 weeks later, and they said, come here, I want to show you something. And I walked over, and there by the firewood conveyor was a little blower from Grizzly and it was pointed down on an angle that the draft would get under the small pieces in sawdust and blow them off, and the big pieces would go out and fall on the pile. So for $700 and 2 hours work, he did what would have cost me $7,000 and 2 weeks labor. There's men that have much, much better ideas than I do, but they can't blossom and they can't grow if they don't have room to grow. Do yourself a favor and let other people share some of their ideas. One of the hardest things for me to get out of the way and give grace to the one that I put in place to be able to make a mistake. We're pretty generous to ourselves when we made mistakes that, oops, that didn't work. We try it again. Thomas Edison, he failed many a time and he tried again. He ended up with a nice light bulb that we appreciate. If you put people in place, and if you're trying to train a leader, and if you want a manager to put in place, you're going to have to give him room to fail. Because he's going to make some mistakes, but don't be too hard on him or you'll not let him grow to his fullest potential. The main reason for the topic, and we've got 2 minutes left. Reclaiming personal time for you, the owners and leaders of the company and daddies and husbands of your family. So what is your goal when you think of reclaiming time? Do you start visualizing palm trees and ocean fronts, hammocks and flip-flops? What do you start seeing when you think about reclaiming time for yourself? I don't like that scene. I sure hope not. That's not why God put us on this life. I have a little motto in my office, and I just have it there for humor, but I have there that all I need is two 6 month vacations a year. That means you wouldn't work any at all, but we're not vacation people. We're not going to spend our time on an ocean front. That's not what God brought us here for. First, God wants you to have quality of life. Remember, we are created in His image that we may bring glory to His name. If we're too busy and stressed out and disorganized, what suffers most? What comes to your mind when you think of an entrepreneur or a individual that's in business and he's stressed out, he's overwhelmed, he's disorganized? Who suffers? He is the individual, his wife, his children, the brotherhood. Life is meant to be enjoyed. Life is meant to be a pleasure. Remember, our adversary, the devil, is ruthless, and he's got a plan. Our devil's got a plan to destroy you and your family. Do you have a plan in place to combat? Do you have a plan to where you can flourish as a husband, as a daddy, or as a brother in the church, so that you can hear those blessed words? In Revelations 22:12, it says, "And behold, I come quickly, and my reward is with me to give every man according as his work shall be." Verse 14, "Blessed are they that do his commandments, that they may have the right to the tree of life, and may enter in through the gates into that city." That's what we're here for, friends. That's what we're here for, folks. You can build an extra load of pallets. You can make an extra mini barn, shove out an extra carton of cabinets. But we have a goal, we have a vision that we might enter into those pearly gates. The Lord bless you.